Global from Asia, number 101, getting your products into the Chinese market via Chinese distributors. Oh, yeah.
Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Episode number 101 of Global from Asia. Thank you so much for being here with me today. Making today's introduction recording here in my last few days in America, Connecticut technically, and it's extremely been exhausting to travel so frequently to my cities, California, Connecticut, New York, Florida, in less than 3 weeks with a one-year-old son and a pregnant wife, so I do not advise others. I knew it would be a little bit difficult, but this is extremely difficult. I think like 4 or 5 times harder than I expected to move around with and be mobile. So I'm getting tons of requests from listeners on how to do bookkeeping for their Hong Kong companies. So I'm setting up a free webinar on Thursday, October 22nd, 9 p.m. Hong Kong time or 9 a.m. New York time. If you want all the time zones as well as the full details and to RSVP, go to globalfromasia.com/HKwebinar. It's free for everybody and it'll be a good one, I promise. Okay, and alrighty, now let's get into the heart of this week's show. We have a treat for you, the Dan Harris from China Law Blog, and he's sharing with us a very hot topic, which a lot of people are interested in, is getting into the Chinese market via Chinese distributors to partner with and to sell your products in the local market. It's based on a few of his exceptional blog posts that he shares on China Law Blog, and those links will all be in the show notes as well as other things, as always, on globalfromasia.com/episode101. So now let's get into the interview. So thank you everybody for tuning in to a Global from Asia podcast. We have a treat for you today. We have Dan Harris, the author and blogger at China Law Blog, but more formally, we can introduce him as a top lawyer in Seattle. He was named, along with his partner Steve, as one of the only 3 Washington State amazing lawyers in international law. He's AV rated top 5% by Martindale Hubbell Law Directory, and he's rated 10.0 by AVVO.com. He's also a super lawyer designation reserved for less than 5% of lawyers nationwide. So he specializes in international business and seems like he has a special place in his heart for China specifically. So he's been in Forbes magazine, Wall Street Journal, Investors, Business Daily, Business Week, and many others. So he's very, very experienced here, and I'm really happy to have you on the show, Dan. So thanks for being here.
Glad to be here.
Great. So today's topic is, I think, is getting more hot. I've seen quite a few posts on your site about getting your product into China via local distributors. So I think you must talk to a lot of these dreamers and business owners in the U.S. and around the world trying to get into China. Maybe we start off at what point in do you think at their business should a Western brand even start to look into or take action into China?
Good question. We're always worried when companies come to us and they're really small and looking to sell to China. The reason we're worried is because it's a lot more difficult to sell your products to a foreign country than to sell it in your own country. And if you haven't at least come somewhat close to maximizing your potential in your own country, a lot of times there's really no reason to be looking at selling to what is still a pretty exotic locale like China. It's hard to know exactly when a business should start looking to sell to China. It's almost easier to say that they should not try to sell to China just because they have a dream of selling their product to 1.5 billion consumers.
True. I mean, I think it's also the media and news is hyping up China as, you know, buying in anything and everything that is Western, which is in some parts true, but I totally do agree with you that it's a very exotic place, and I think you can't really use a lot of your materials and your knowledge from your home country.
That's exactly true. But what's interesting is we've had companies, and these are the best candidates, that have come to us for help getting into China because without even trying, they've been making sales to China in amounts that have shocked them. So it is not unheard of for an American company to catch on in China without having made any effort whatsoever to sell even one widget in China. It can be the strangest products that catch on. We had a company that made not model airplanes, the airplanes that fly, and they were selling to China simply because a number of stores had called them. And these were, this was many years ago when the, essentially a drone type product, and it was when they were way, way more expensive than they are now. And so they started focusing on maximizing their China business. We've had a company in the cookie industry, of all things, that got a $1 million order from a company in China. So sometimes gold does fall from the sky for U.S. manufacturers, but those are the rare instances.
True. Yeah, I mean, sometimes the Chinese buyers almost like that it's not in China. It's more like exclusive, and they hunt down some products. So yeah, I think it's true. It's gold in the sky. I like that. So maybe they're getting these signals, and so maybe they want to take these steps. So I'll link a few of your great blog posts on the show notes of the show today that talk about this. But you mentioned China trademark, which I think you say is one of the first steps. Do you want to maybe share a little bit about that?
Sure. Getting a trademark in China is 99% of the time a no-brainer. If you're going to sell your product in China, or even if you're just going to manufacture your product in China, and that product is going to have your company name on it, or your brand name, or even if just your packaging is going to have your company name or your brand name or your logo on it, and the logo obviously could also be on the product, then you should protect that trademark. And Americans are the worst violators of that advice, because in the United States, the first company to use a trademark in commerce gets the trademark without even having to register it. In most countries, other than the United States, England, Canada, other than the countries that are under the British system, countries like China, France, Italy, Japan, in most countries, the first to register for a trademark gets it. So again and again, we see American companies go over to China, start selling there or start manufacturing there, and then all of a sudden they learn that someone has been using their trademark. And a lot of times, and I should put their trademark in quotes, and a lot of times that company, the U.S. company, learns about the Chinese company using quote-unquote their trademark after the Chinese company comes to the American company and says, you are using our trademark. And the American company does not understand why the Chinese company is saying that, but the Chinese company has gone off and registered the trademark, and now the American company can't use it in China unless it pays a lot of money in licensing fees to this Chinese company. Registering a trademark in China early is easy and not very expensive. Having to deal with it later is a disaster, and oftentimes there's no amount of money that can solve the problem. Apple had that issue.
Yeah.
With one of its names. I think it was the iPad.
Yep.
Apple could afford to buy its way out of it. I can't remember how much they paid for the name in China, but it was a lot more than most companies could afford.
I remember reading that too a couple of years ago, and yeah, it was definitely in, I don't want to say a number either, but it was definitely a huge number, and maybe the 100.
Yeah, it was double digits. I'm certain it was double digits in the millions.
Yep. Definitely. I think Tesla is in this issue right now, if I remember off the top of my head, but I think somebody in Beijing owns the Tesla.
Yes, I read that Tesla was facing that issue.
And I don't think the guy wants to even sell it.
And it is tough. I mean, we are right now dealing with this issue for a company that is the leading company in its industry. And we know, but have no ability to prove, that its factory went off and registered its trademark. And now it's looking like this company is no longer going to be able to manufacture its products in China, which is a big, big problem for them. And it's because they didn't register their trademark and someone else did. And it's as bad a situation as can be. And in this circumstance, it's so bad that we've tried to negotiate. They won't negotiate the trademark holder. And we've even tried to work with customs to get some sort of exemption to allow our client to manufacture with this name, take the goods straight to customs and ship them out. But so far, customs is saying, no, you can't even do that because that constitutes using the product in China.
Yep.
And you can't do that without violating someone else's trademark. And we're not going to let it leave because you don't have the trademark.
Yep. Yeah. Just for listeners not aware, it's not. Yeah. So the trademark's not just for selling in China, but also manufacturing, like Dan's mentioning here. So it's definitely a valuable thing to have. So say they got the trademark and they've done the first few steps. I think this show is talking about distributors in China that maybe have access to the market and distribution existing already, which does sound like another gold from the sky situation. And but of course, it's a huge kind of like unknown for somebody sitting in the U.S. or outside of China to do. What do you usually say to somebody starting to search?
Well, I say the easiest thing first, which is find a good distributor. but now the tough part, of course, is finding the good distributor, especially since there are very few good distributors in China who are going to be interested in your product. And the reason I say that is because there are very few distributors in China who have a nationwide reach. So there might be a good distributor for Shanghai, there might be a good distributor for Beijing, etc. Now, of course, it's really going to vary depending on the product. The other problem, though, is a lot of times the good distributors are essentially already taken. So let's say you've got a great candy bar that you want to sell in China. Well, and I don't know if this is true or not because I do not know the candy bar industry particularly well in China. But let's say the big companies, the Nestle's, the Hershey's, et cetera, they presumably are doing their own distribution. But let's pretend there are two really good distributors of candy bars in China. Well, they both probably already have three or four candy bar manufacturers for whom they're distributing. So why should they bother with yours, having to spend all the time, money, and money introducing your product to the market when they've already got two or three other products that are easy sales for them? So that can really complicate things. And what makes China so difficult on the retail side is there are not the same distribution networks, not the same number of huge retail chains. The whole market is just very different than in the United States and much of Europe or Canada. So it can be very difficult to get a product to market in China. And a lot of times you shouldn't even really try, in the sense that you shouldn't try to get your product to market in China. Maybe you should start out trying to get your product to market in Shanghai, and then if it goes well there, then you expand, or Shenzhen or wherever. A lot, again, depends on your own product. But there's a real pitfall that American companies and European companies as well, a pit, I guess I should say, that they often fall into with distributors in China, and that is they'll give these distributors an exclusive distribution right. And so we've had companies that have come to us, and they are in a five-year deal with, let's say, a really good distributor in China, and this distributor came to the American company and said, hey, I'm a really good distributor. I'm distributing for these three other high-end candy bar companies. I'd like to distribute for yours, but I'd like an exclusive arrangement for the next 5 years. Only I can distribute your candy bars in China. Well, the American company will call us a year or two later and say, I want to sell my candy bars in China. I've got this five-year exclusive deal with a distributor there, and they haven't sold a single candy bar.
Oh, man.
And I'll go, okay, you've got a real big problem. They didn't sell a single candy bar, and they never will. And what they've effectively done is blocked you from entering the Chinese market for 5 years. So they have blocked you as competition to their other three candy bars.
Got it.
And then they'll say, well, I'll say, why did you give them, you know, why'd you do this deal? And they'll say, well, they told me I needed to give them an exclusive agreement. And no, that's not true. You don't. There's no law on that in China. You could just have given them the agreement for Shanghai or Beijing or some province or whatever. You didn't have to give it to them for all of China. And this is a basic tenet of distribution agreements. This is true in China, Argentina, wherever. If you're going to give somebody an exclusive, you need to have some trip points. So a good contract might say, you get an exclusive for Shanghai, but if you don't sell at least $1 million in year one and at least $2 million in year two, we can terminate you with 2 weeks' notice.
Wow. Yeah, definitely.
Americans and Europeans as well, the old expression about doing business in China is don't leave your brains at the gate. Mm. And too often they do, because they're just so enthralled with this idea that this distributor that's so good has contacted them. And so they just go right along with everything.
True. Well, yeah, I mean, this kind of leads into the next question, which is kind of covered a little bit in your last answer. But, you know, so a contract, and which you have covered in pretty well on some of your blog posts, which we'll link. I think that's another overwhelming thing for Western or, you know, companies outside of China. It's like, how do I make a contract for a China distributor? Of course, this is, you know, a very complex thing, but maybe some high level tips or pointers.
Well, it's not as complex as people would like to believe. And I say would like to believe because so often when Americans get burned in China, they will, let's take these distributors relationships, where they've given an exclusive, a lot of times these companies will spread the word that you can't do business in China because they don't respect the law. Or, you know, contracts don't work in China. Well, they don't work if you've entered into a silly one. Mm. And that's true in every country. So there are definitely some basic tenets that apply to doing business in China the right way with a contract. And one of those is, I would say probably 90% of the time, if you're dealing with a Chinese company, let's say a Chinese distributor, you're going to want that contract to be in Chinese, the official version, and you're going to want disputes to be resolved in a Chinese court. Because if, let's say, your distributor is one of the other things that needs to go in a distribution agreement is you want protections of your brand. So what you don't want is, you don't want to give somebody the right to sell your brand candy bar and then have them sell your brand candy bar, but it not be your candy bar. Or let's say sell your brand candy bar, but leave it unrefrigerated for 6 months so that when people buy it, it tastes terrible. And then people in China think you have a terrible brand, terrible product, and the word can spread around the world, and you could actually harm your sales, let's say, back in the United States because of something that happened in China, or even worse, let's say 5 people get poisoned by your candy bar in China, all because of how your distributor handled it.
Mm.
And it makes the international press, and people stop buying so many of your candy bars in the United States.
Mm.
So you're going to want provisions in your contract saying that they can't harm your reputation, they can't do this, they can't sell candy bars that are more than a month old, et cetera, et cetera. Now, how are you going to enforce those provisions? Americans oftentimes think, well, I'm going to put in my contract that all disputes will be resolved in a court in Seattle because I know Seattle courts will be fair and I won't be hometown. Well, that's true, except a Seattle court has no ability to do anything in China, and the Chinese companies know it. So they're happy to sign a contract that says disputes need to be resolved in Seattle because they know that that contract has no real power whatsoever. So not only do you want to be sure to have the right substance terms in your contract, but it's also critical that you think about and understand what sorts of disputes you could end up having with your Chinese company and where is the best place for those to be resolved. And surprisingly enough, and this is even though, of course, the Chinese courts are not perfect, they're far from perfect, but at least they have some power. And they generally do enforce well-drafted contracts that are clear and that they should be enforcing. And so a contract that calls for disputes to be resolved in China is most of the time going to be better than one that calls for disputes to be resolved in the United States.
Okay. Appreciative you sharing this. This is very valuable information. So kind of makes me think, so things are going, let's assume they found the right distributor and things are going well. The long term is just continue to renew the agreement. Is there something maybe that should be setting up a company later, or would this always be done without a company? Or
well, that's really going to vary. If you've got a distributor in China who's doing a really good job with your product, probably the next best step would be to ramp it up, meaning contribute more for advertising, spread farther into China, maybe raise prices, all normal business issues. You could say, look, our product's doing really well in China. It's not so much because of the distributor. It's because we have a great product. So now we're going to end this relationship with the distributor or distributors and go into China ourselves. It's the rare company that does that because it's got to be a pretty big company to think about doing that in that sort of situation. There is one other thing I should mention in a distribution contract, a distributor contract that's important, and that goes back to trademarks, and that is you're going to want to license your distributor to use your trademark. And there are two possible pitfalls there. One, Chinese companies oftentimes say, no, the law doesn't allow you to license us to use your trademark. You have to give us ownership of your trademark, and then when the agreement's over, we'll give it back to you. No, never do that. There is no such law, and you'll never get it back. The other thing, though, is that in China, if you go more than 3 years without using your trademark in China, you can lose your trademark. Someone can challenge your trademark and say you don't own it anymore. And so we're always concerned with our clients who license their trademark to someone in China. We want to make sure that a situation doesn't arise where someone can say, you American company or you British company, you never used this trademark in China. Somebody else did. Now you lose it. So in the contract, in the licensing agreement, we're very clear that the Chinese company is essentially using the trademark on our behalf in China, and then we alert the Chinese trademark office to the fact that we are licensing the trademark out, and those things avoid the situation where somebody can come and say, you don't own your trademark anymore because you never used it in the last 3 or 4 years.
Got it. Yeah. Wow. Take a lot of notes here, Dan. So I think I really respect your time, and we've been going for quite a while. Maybe we can talk a little bit about your firm and what you do and how people can reach out to you.
Oh, sure. Well, what we do is basically what I just talked about for the last 15 minutes or so. We help foreign companies, mostly American, Canadian, Latin American, and European companies, navigate the legal landscape in China. And it can range from helping them set up a company there, helping them with their contracts, helping them with their employment relationships, helping them with their intellectual property, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Basically, we run the gamut of legal help for foreign companies trying to figure out and operate in China.
Great.
And the way to reach us is to go to the China Law Blog, and somewhere on there is all of our contact info.
Okay, we'll do. I'll link your website as well as some of your great articles that referenced in today's points. So, thanks again, Dan. And any last tips or advice for maybe somebody that's not yet started? I mean, in China, and I guess we kind of answered at the beginning, but something. How much time should they give it? Maybe is this like a seems like. China can be a little bit longer for some of the paperwork, right? Would you say, or?
Yes. Just said by way of an example, during our phone conversation, I could have formed a company in the United States, basically in any state in the United States. I could have gone online and formed a company, but in China, it typically takes 4 to 6 months.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the cost of doing it is way higher in China because it takes 4 to 6 months and a lot more needs to be done. So yeah, you do need to be patient. Although it's interesting because when we first started our law firm, we talked about how everything took 3 to 4 times longer than we thought it would take. So there's this natural tendency among entrepreneurs to assume the best for every single process along the way. And even in the United States, I think you should multiply it by 3 to 4 times. I can remember, now this was in the old days, it took us a week longer to get our computers than we thought it would. Well, if it's 3 to 4 times in the United States, it's probably 10 times.
true. Yeah, patience is definitely a virtue anywhere, but especially
definitely.
In China. All right. So thanks.
Exactly.
Thanks so
Thank
much,
you
Dan.
Very much.
Sure, sure.
So long.
Okay, cheers.
Bye.
So thank you so much, Dan, for coming on and sharing so openly. I always appreciate everybody who we interview on this podcast to share and give their knowledge, especially though lawyers and legal advice, which is very hard to get here, so openly. So also please check out his blog at chinalawblog.com and reach out to him if you need any legal services for the Chinese market and also many other international markets. Okay, so just some more fun stuff. By the time this show is online, I will be back in Asia. I just want to thank Rex Redstone and Alan Budu for hosting me at their homes while I was in the States. Rex, you took care of me when I was in San Francisco, and Alan while I was in New Jersey. Very much appreciated, especially with my, growing family along with me, so appreciate the hospitality. Also, I'm really excited to be going to the DCBKK conference hosted by the Tropical MBA guys in mid-October. You know, I've been getting a lot of people reaching out to me that are going to be there already, and it's always jam-packed full of internet entrepreneurs and business owners. And if you happen to be going to Bangkok for this conference, please reach out to me and hopefully we can make it happen. There's going to be like hundreds of people there and it's always overwhelming, but I'd definitely love to connect with you, especially if you're listening to the show. I will actually be hosting a meetup there on Thursday, October 15th in the late afternoon for conference attendees discussing Hong Kong business best practices, you know, kind of just mostly just networking with other people that have companies in Hong Kong doing their international business and helping maybe masterminding a little bit, sharing ideas and problems we're all having. So it'd be cool to meet some of you guys too there or at any time of the conference. That's all I have for today. It's getting late here in America, and I'm going to go put my kid to bed. Have a great day, guys, and thanks again for listening. Bye-bye.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.